Today on The Grave Talks, Darkness Among Us, a conversation with James Anito. The world is a dark place. At least that's how it can feel sometimes. The last 2 years have led us down some very crooked paths. Paths that until recently many of us never thought we would ever uncover. Is it just the human nature in all of us that's turned attitudes dark and compassion to disgust? Or is there something else at play as we all battle our own personal demons? Could there be an actual demon at work as well? That's what we discussed today with James Anito on The Grave Talks.
I think with what's going on currently in the world, has happened many times before, of course, not in our lifetime, but has been a repeated thing throughout history. Some even worse, of course, that people have lived through. And of course, every time this pestilence or these natural disasters occur, especially before we, I would say meteorology, but they're always wrong. We always know that, guys. But before these sciences were kind of developed, it was that these natural disasters occurred because of a god being angry. God of Pazuzu, which is very prevalent in historical times and, of course, in modern pop culture because of The Exorcist. That was the demon that supposedly had possessed Reagan through the Ouija board and then created the Sozo phenomenon. Mm-hmm. There's always been some kind of dabble of dark involved in people's perception of what occurs. Yes, there has been a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. It has affected people because we're in a day and age now that we are unfortunately lazy to search out the answers. We hear what we read based upon people that aren't even specialized in a specific thing, or maybe nowadays bought off by lobbyists. Who knows these things? These are occurrable things. But a lot of people don't tend to do their own research and go to a library and do the things that you would do if you were in an academic state, going to college, which can be also open-ended. Doctors come from all different breeds, from different people and professors they learn from, doctors they learn from. So there's always that degree. But yeah, I think there could be always a possibility when we're in these periods of time that cases could either, of course, squell, in some fashion does tend to see that. I've been not surprisingly too busy throughout COVID, do a lot of phone consultations, but of course, home visits deterred due to people's awareness or, not wanting to receive COVID-19. Yeah, I think there has been a fluctuation in history where there's been dark times and people have said that there's dark forces at play. Look at Hitler as a prime example. I know that's a touchy subject, but a lot of people believe he was the Antichrist. And because of the mass people, he almost killed a whole religion. If you think about it, a lot of Jewish people were killed. And so you could look at it as a rebellious thing, that the Jews turned against God because of killing Jesus. Well, they didn't kill Jesus, but, they're one of the reasons that he did die. So there's, I believe there's always that war too, of that as well that quells. So I don't know if it's preternatural. I know a lot of it's natural, but you definitely see spikes when people are in a fear state or in dread, because that's what negativity feeds off of. If you look at New Thought, laws of attraction, the positive attracts the positive, the negative attracts the negative. And we see that on a daily basis in our livelihood.
What have you seen? Obviously there's been less travel and such over the last almost 2 years now. But in terms of people reaching out, people being, I guess, even more digitally connected than they've probably ever been in the past. And people reaching out to you, have you felt like there's been an increase in people and cases and in incidences where people are reaching out saying there's something wrong going on here? Then it goes beyond just, mental strain.
I think the mental strain, as I touched a little bit upon it in the first question, is that, you know, I have seen a kind of a fluctuation in some form, but, you know, it is hard to handle cases. So most of the time you can talk somebody through it if you properly know how to guide somebody through steps and processes of making them their strength come within, of course, within their faith. There's a ideology of using kid gloves when it comes to people. So if you're good at counseling people and helping people utilize their free will to live a positive and straightforward pathway, you know, we all have vices, but as many virtues as they can to deter any of the negative and have a stronger faith in God. So a lot of it can be done consulting through the phone, but to really get a true diagnosis of what's going on, it always, to me, as an analytical individual, it has to be kind of conceived physically. You know, a scientist can't be on Zoom in a lab and make sure that experiment that's being done to see if it's empirical be on Zoom and trying to do an experiment. You have to be physically a part of that experiment, and you have to see what's occurring. You have to get, of course, your physical reactions, your readings, your data. And so it's hard. You know, I have seen a lot of mental strain be the cause, you know. People get cabin fever, and some people live in not so very clean houses, maybe black mold, they're having hallucinations, or maybe they're drinking more due to the nature of what the beast that's been unleashed on the world, maybe you get dabbling the drugs. So you always have to handle these people based upon that anything's possible. And unfortunately, a lot of people would love to hear it's demons, but it's fortunately more so the natural causes, the human element that I naturally deal with, the traumas that echo. Sure. But that doesn't deter the possibility of actually being paranormal either. Sometimes that is generated through these people's projections.
And that's what I wonder about sometimes, just with the stress that everyone's under and things of that nature. Does that not open up kind of a gateway or more opportunities for darker things to kind of seep into people's lives where things are already rough?
Oh yeah, definitely. If you think about that, if you revel in darkness, the darkness shall dance around you. You know, because if you're, and I like to use Nella, if you're in a dark room and you close all the curtains, all the doors, it's black, there's no peep of light, you know? So, that's not going to change unless you create an action by making that light occur. So, you know, people that are already in dark places, maybe they're already dealing with something, and the lack of them being able to express the need for help to people in a physical manner, because truly when people are dealing with the demonic, in most cases, I would say 90% of the time, they don't know they're possessed or being affected. So could you imagine if usually those occurrences are, we are sought out by outside family members, friends, mm-hmm. or somebody that came across this person and didn't feel something was right. So that's usually those true cases. So yeah. When can you imagine if this person has no contact with anybody because they're stuck in their home because of quarantine and they're going through these episodes, this affliction, and yeah. They have nobody. And could you imagine that? I definitely could not. That could be torturous. So I think it's definitely a possibility. I'm so glad that I've never had to go through that.
It's something I wonder about, and I'm not saying that everyone who has a negative attitude right now or has kind of lost patience with other human beings is possessed or has something demonic going on with them. I feel like there's been a shift in compassion within our society where there's, when we've gone through other things in the past that have kind of required a concerted effort upon everyone's part to kind of do something, you know, a lot of times it was like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's knock this out because it's for the greater good. But it feels like this time around, even asking the simplest of things of people, and I'm not talking about you have to get vaccinated or this or that. I'm not even going down that road. I guess that's a little more intrusive. But the fact that we can't even get people to put on a freaking mask when it's required in a certain area, or like a school district has to shut down because somebody won't do it, or a restaurant owner or a boutique shop or something, someone's getting attacked because someone views it's infringing on their constitutional rights. Just something as simple as that. Just something as like, look, it's just a little thing. And just how ugly someone gets. Now, I understand one can have an opinion on this one way or the other, but they're not entitled to their own set of facts. And and if you have your opinion, great. But for the greater good, the fight and the vileness that we're seeing out of some people today, that's what is kind of disturbing to me. It seems like it goes beyond just the pale of, I disagree, but you know what? I'm just going to go with the flow for right now because, you know, why not? It'll be easier than me causing a scene and getting arrested or whatever the case may be. But we just see such utter lack of respect for one another on something that really just seems so simple. It's like if we can't handle this and something that's been plaguing all of us for so long, I mean, what kind of shape are we in? I mean, it feels like there's something darker going on with humans, that there is this level of ambivalence and just lack of compassion for one another and vileness that's out there today.
That's a very long question within the human pathology.
Oh, yeah.
Like anthropology in itself, like how humans have developed. And I think a lot of the ways we are now, even, you know, with the older folk that are still as tenacious as the young folk, because of the times we are in, I really truly think it is, of course, how we've developed as humans. You've become more conscious with computer technology solving the question for us instead of us all solving it. You know, of course, people becoming more opinionated, believing their opinions are fact, even though there is, like you said, fact, and that's hard to shake from, because a fact is empirical, and most of the time, of course, unless proven otherwise, but most times, a lot of science is theory, but you know, it doesn't, you know, people are entitled to their own theories. But a motto to mono, you know, this is not a day for an eye for an eye. And I think too many people are too opinionated. You know, I think the word narcissistic is thrown out way too much nowadays. But I think the culture we build, the more we allow for individuality, as bad as that sounds, and I believe everybody should have the self-confidence and the freedom to live and perform good actions if that is what they wish, but we've allowed too much individualism where we just care about me mm-hmm. instead of I, because humanity is a team effort. We're not all different. Yes, we are different in the DNA makeup in some form of fashion. But we are of the same species. We are of the same descent. Yes, we have different religious beliefs, but we still come from a commonality. And we lost that.
Yeah.
And that is something that is taught. And I'm not a very preachy individual, because yeah. I believe in what I believe, and I respect every tome and a Bible and a scripture that's out there, because it's all of, at some point for most religions, of a positive manner that unfortunately humanity tangles and allows their tentacles of power and greed to get involved with in some cases. And you see this throughout, you know, and I don't think it's ever going to change. We're humans. And yes, we have lost more of the companionship we have for people. But that is why in the Old Testament, especially, you know, I'm of course of a Christian background, mainly, I was ordained a Christian minister, and then I was ordained a Catholic deacon. So it's my specialty within theology. Mm-hmm. But, if you look at the Old Testament, why do you think people like say, oh, God's not good? Look at the Old Testament. They always lean towards that because of the condemning he did to the people that did not listen to him, mm-hmm. listen to the law. People think that, oh, he shouldn't have done that. But those people didn't listen. They were killing other people. They were doing heinous things. And God threw his punishment down. If you break the law, the iron fist might not get you the first time, but eventually will catch up to you. And it is shown throughout, if we continue doing bad and continue straying from certain ways. Yes, people weren't perfect back in BC, and then, you know, of course, the early AD era. You know, people still weren't good. There was lots of wars and fathoms and bloodshed, but in the same time of it, there was less people. The more that we came more to be more people, we just expanded. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see that. Unfortunately, I wish as much as there would be a utopia. I don't think that can be done as long as everyone has a utopia within themselves. Like me, I have vices, as I stated, but I try to put as many virtues in a basket as I can. I try to do good for people. I try to do good deeds for myself, my family, outsiders. I try to say good things about people, not kick people while they're down. You know, I, of course, did not always do these things, but I've learned that doing bad causes no continuity within life. Mm-hmm. If we were all evil, we'd all be nuking each other and there would be no life. It would not be able to, you'd be able to breathe the air. So I realized that. So I, in my circle, I do as best as I can. I try to project that out to people. Mm-hmm. And I think if the more people that did that, the more there would be change. But always there's the human element. We all, unfortunately, even at the top, will come crashing down.
Yeah.
But it's how we recover. And too many of us cannot recover from a fall. And I think that's the problem.
It's an interesting thing. The world has obviously gone in phases of more darkness and more light and whatnot. And I know, we said earlier about narcissism, the word being thrown out there a lot right now. I don't know that it's being thrown out, over too much. I mean, I just feel like that there's just a explosion of that, and some generations that have been raised almost to be that, and that hopefully will reverse itself once a generation or two realizes, hey, this wasn't the best of ideas. It's interesting too, when you look back in history, we all tend to think, well, what's going on over the last 10, 20 years is it. There's nothing worse. But if you do look back in history more, in some even much darker times, as much as it sucks, right now, the world has gone through some fairly dark things that really make today pale in comparison.
Well, a prime example in history is it's called the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
That was a pretty bad time. You think about it, like when the Roman Empire collapsed, especially in the British Isles, they went from having lavish plumbing and fresh water and all this lavishing like endless good prosperous things, and then when the Roman Empire came crashing down because of the Huns, guess what, much years later they did not know how to continue those things, those architectures and designs, and they went from all those primy things to huts, pooping outside their huts,
yeah,
or in putting in buckets and then throwing it in their drinking water.
Yeah,
like we tend to forget how beneficial we have it, and I think that's the problem too.
Yeah,
but the Dark Age is a prime example of a pretty crappy time in humanity.
What are some examples, whether it be personal and things that you've dealt with in terms of your work, or just observations on society and things right now? What are some things that you would pick out and go, I think this right here is an example of not just, someone who's dealing with a mental illness, or someone who's dealing with things that are explainable in terms of just, human, functionality, mental capacity, things of that nature, but something where there is something darker at play or having taken over something or someone. What are some things that you've kind of noticed or that you've dealt with over the last couple of years, some cases maybe that really kind of have made you go, wow, that's, this is tough.
Yes. It's been quite a few years since I've dealt with a true demonic case, but, I still have dealt with cases of some form of negativity or maybe unexplained, thought to be negative, but it was just attempt at communication or just a way that it could communicate. But some of the things I would look at, especially in this day and age where there are a lot of mental ailments, you know, the DSM-5 is packed compared to the DSM-4 and before that, oh God, there's so many more disorders now. But it's still, you know, the things that you can feel going into a location, especially if you're not of an individual, to claim some sort of intuition or sensitivity or sixth sense. You're just an analytical individual who could even be a skeptic or agnostic or atheist, and you go into a location and it's wavering. The fight, fright, or flight mental wiring diagram goes off, where it's like your body's telling you and your mind's telling you, dude, you got to get out of here. Like, but you know, your soul or whatever powers you to stay in that situation, you know, keeps you to be unwavering. So I think that is a big thing, because yes, I've heard people that have been around serial killers and interviewed them, and the charismatic nature that they came off of, like their presence, or the presence was dark and they felt that, even though they didn't really necessarily believe in that. You know, of course, there's been documented in the literature by people that have interviewed these individuals, and there's movies made on it. Like Halloween is a prime example, and we're in Halloween. But there's always that element that somebody can give off that kind of presence. But when it's wavering, it shakes everybody's foundation that is a part of maybe the case or within that household. There is like legit barometric pressure changes, like the atmosphere changes, it gets hard to breathe. And you know, with the individual that is maybe going under oppression or possession, you know, a lot of these people weren't, they had trauma, some sort of in their early childhood, maybe earlier in their young adulthood. But most of them had a good job, had a good relationship going on, and it was a complete 180. Everything's going wrong now. They're from going from not drinking to drinking, and not from smoking cigarettes to smoking cigarettes and doing heavy drugs. Like, yes, this can be done by pressure and anxiety, but when these are sudden things, these are things that you can look at, try to piece together. If iconography, religious items, positive items are being broken, or these are things that a positive individual want to do. So these are things that also you could look upon, because, you know, anything that is of positive iconography creates emphasis for us to be positive, and that a negative individual or an evil entity such as a demon wouldn't want that intertwined in our life, because it's a coping mechanism that we can use to defend ourselves. So they would go after these objects. So these certain things would occur, and there definitely would be paranormal phenomenon, maybe not as theatrical as you see it on television, but there will be certain things, such maybe as bilocation, certain objects, maybe like you could say psychokinesis, but objects moving. I of course was in a case where scratches appeared right on the leg. I didn't notice it because I always have multiple people during the interview process, so they can all look at different perspectives of what's going on and safer to do so. But I was looking at the individual's face because I'm not a detective or have gone through any special investigating protocols through criminal law or through law enforcement academy, but I've dealt with people enough, and, you know, work with people in retail and management, and, you know, did human resources classes. So I look at the faces to try to see if they're giving off any, kind of emotion when they're talking about this story. And, you know, one of the other gentlemen there who was, recording on a digital recorder noticed his leg, and he's like, and of course he was wearing shorts, so it would something that would have been noticeable. And he's like, James, scratches are appearing on his leg. All of a sudden you start seeing scratches appear, and of course in three, but that case wasn't demonic, it was negative. And this is many years ago, but it wasn't demonic, it was negative, but it was still not liking that we were there. So it was trying to create a reaction, so that our action was to get the hell out of there, because for normal individuals, if they've seen a scratch appearing, they probably would poop themselves and run out the door. Mm-hmm. But for us, it gave us validation that this man wasn't crazy. Something did occur, but that doesn't always happen either. So like for that, that's a classic sign. But there's so many things you can look at and dissect,
yeah,
that will naturally throw it away from the human psychology aspect of it. But there always will, unfortunately, be human element. And you have to figure out what in what form it is. Because, you know, Charles Dickens, who, of course, wrote A Christmas Carol, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of basically created the ideology of how we, and methodology on how we celebrate Christmas now in some form or fashion. You know, wrote about spirits in his book. He also wrote a pamphlet called Haunted Houses back in the 1890s, 1880s, you know? And it said that the haunted house was haunted because of the human element. A house, how would you know a house is haunted unless somebody experienced it? Mm-hmm. They're in that house when they experience it. They're on the property when they experience it. They're part of that envelope. So there's always going to be a human element, and you just have to figure out in what manner is it. And not to go on too much of a tangent, but this is a meaty subject, but somebody that does have a psychological ailment still could be going through something preternatural as well. So now that's where it gets hard.
Sure. Let me ask you this. This is an interesting thing, and it's something I have seen an increase in over the last 2 years in terms of volume of stories of a certain style that or accounts of a certain style that I've had written into us on our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online. And that would be the idea of people, essentially the living, haunting themselves with their own energy, with their own anxieties, negativity, it's whatever it may be, where it's not even necessarily something, some outside force coming in, and nothing demonic, nothing, not even like, you know, Dead Aunt Sally or something, but literally our own energy playing with us re-encountering it. You know, because I think honestly, because we've been so bottled up for the last amount of time in many cases that, you know, it's kind of some residual type things people are sensing. What are your thoughts on that of the living and our own energy being out there and, you know, causing odd situations, chaos, some things like that?
Well, you know, to give a quick shout out, because, you know, I am a demonologist. Mm-hmm. Everybody has the mantra that I have, just a background in theology or,
yeah,
in that form. But I'm a paranormal investigator. But one of the fascinations I have is parapsychology. I'm actually a parapsychology investigator with one of the biggest parapsychology groups in Canada, PPRI. Mm-hmm. And they have a New England branch, and I'm one of the members because I do believe in telekinesis and psychokinesis and telepathy, precognition in some form or fashion. I do believe that people could have abilities, but they could also want this reality, this gullibility or this imagination, and project it. There have been experiments like the Philip experiment, which was somewhat successful, but debated to this day. Of course, you know, everybody will try to piss in somebody's Cheerios. But there was the Philip experiment. So much research on psychokinesis and telepathy and telekinesis. You know, I think it is more of a factor than any of it. Actually, to be honest with you, I think 90% of it, the high 90s, is the human element to a haunting and to, of course, any case. As much as it is hard to explain that to an individual, sometimes the best you can tell them that there is no conclusion. You know, this is how you get better over it, if you want to get better, or how you develop it. But it's hard to give a conclusion when there is no fact to it. So parapsychology is very expansive and very, very interesting. It is an accredited social science in America, like psychology is. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating what the human mind's capable of. And back to history, I'm not a historian by any means, but going back to the history, you look at Native American cultures with the talpa, which is a thought form created by ritual to protect certain lands. And then there's the thought form. And then, of course, there's the poltergeist of the German name, noisy ghost, which poltergeist is a human generated ghost. Of course, people debate on that, but it is. That's the whole meaning of poltergeist and why it was created. But so, yeah, there's these phenomenon that have been experienced for thousands of years. You know, the idea of a talpa comes from Hinduistic belief systems too, you know? So, and that's the oldest religion, modern day religion, 4,400 years old. Of course, there's older religions that still could be practiced in some form, but Hinduism's the third largest religion, but that has a lot of thought form, and Shintoism, which is of course the Japanese kind of brother of it. You know, everything is life and you put thought into it. And so you see that it's always a possibility that what we put out could be the factor of what's going on. You know, people believe in karma, you put what you do, or the threefold rule when it comes to Wicca, you know, what you do comes back to you threefold. So there's always some ideology of it. And I think if you believe you're dealing with a haunting and every day, even though you're not, every day you wake up and you say, I'm being haunted, you think you're hearing things. And even though you might not be schizophrenic or diagnosed as such, but you're hearing voices every day because this is what you want to believe, then I definitely believe in time that you can project something. I actually did my own experiment, not to linger on this, but what's fascinating about it is it's actually pretty crappy what I did. I will openly admit it. But and sometimes you have to do what is necessary for an experiment to observe. And it makes me a crappy person saying that. But so I had no longer a friend, but not because of this situation. But I had a friend who lived, his mom lived next door to where his grandfather lived. And there were the two houses built in that area. I don't know too much history of the land, but I never felt like any of those houses. Being around the subject, I think you get antiquated with understanding environments, as long as, of course, you don't let your perception get the best of you. And, you know, I never felt anything bad, you know, but his grandfather did die in the house. And he really wanted to try to communicate with his grandfather. And, you know, I, not playfully, I said, you know, we can try, you know, this is the ways we can do it. If this is what you want. But once again, I didn't think anything was haunted in this house. And I could be wrong. And this is really what could have occurred. But we investigated there multiple times. The first few times, nothing. But we were, of course, it was me, him, and another person. Nothing was happening. So we were being fools and making him think things were happening, like doing knocking when he didn't see it. Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. And it kind of created like an environment eventually where probably the fourth time in, we actually, maybe we made this occur in our minds. So it was the shared hallucination. Well, maybe we really did create some sort of rap or some sort of being that has some sort of intelligence because of our collective consciousness, which is also another big thing for people. But things started happening. We were all downstairs without even us doing it. We heard a door close. We caught actual voices on a digital recorder where it was so clear that it was not anybody in the room. It was not nobody next door outside. You know, sometimes when you get an EVP, if it's really, really muffled, or people call it a class C or something like that, there is a possibility of you catching that from a radio wave or some from outside at a distance and catching something. It's very rare, of course, because they have a small perimeter of those things on the microphone. Mm-hmm. But it can occur. Anything's possible. And but we started catching things on the digital recorder, a woman's voice, conversations between two individuals. And mind you, the only person that lived there was their family.
Yeah.
So it was crazy how it occurred. Yes, crappy that we kind of played with them at first, but some of that playing with fire actually kind of, not necessarily did we get burnt because it's not like we summoned a demon, but playing with the fire kind of created a reaction. And it was interesting to experience that because maybe my mind got the best of me because of I got gullible to it. But for all three of us to hear it, and experience it through devices and data was fascinating. And sure. It's always something I look back at when it comes to parapsychology, was that the human element or was there something there nearby we pulled due to our questioning? So, you know, I think the cat's out of the bag on which one it is, but it's still interesting and comes close to a self-experiment I've done.
Tell me about a case that maybe you've worked on in the last, handful of years that stands out to you. It doesn't have to be demonic or anything like that, but just one that, you know, really, you know, when you look back on, like, it's one that certainly still draws your attention.
Unfortunately, this one is a few years out, too. I think any case, to be honest with you, anytime you deal with a human being, it's interesting because everybody's different.
Sure.
You know, there could be similarities and characteristics in the haunting, but every person is their own character and how you handle them is differently. You can take with a case for what you've done before and it still will have a different piece to the puzzle when you get to that next case. So I think one of the cases that will always stand true to me, it was a demonic case, in my opinion. It was an infestation. Mm-hmm. This was in Massachusetts. And it was a husband and wife and kids. And I do a multi-point interview stage. I do a phone interview. I do a questionnaire through email. I do a in-person interview. So a three-point interview, basically, because I really always want to see if there's red flags within the story. If the story changes, how true do they stay to the wording? Are they just lying? Or they really mean what they're saying? So because you really have to, humans do crazy things.
Sure.
And so I go through a multi-point interview process. And within that process, you're able to kind of decipher what you're dealing with. So I had done a phone interview and an email, a questionnaire with them. Mm-hmm. And I was slated to go to their house that weekend. And I'd never seen their house. I knew their address, mind you. I never knew what they looked like because they'd never sent me pictures of their kids, like not like as a family portrait or a family photo. It was always like maybe a picture of a scratch where it was just an arm picture or picture of the scenery of the interior, like not even many photos. Like I would say maybe one or two, like maybe they said this object moved, they take a picture of that. But never like full portraits of these people, never seen their faces, their bodies to the full detail, never seen their outside of their house, seen one or two rooms possibly. And it was like a two decker house, maybe Cape Cod. Mm-hmm. And so the week of that case, I had a prolific nightmare. And the prolific nightmare was me driving to this family's house. Of course, noticing the surroundings, because that's the one of the things I do when I go to how bad is the surroundings? This is a bad area. Could it enable what's going on? Is their house in disarray from the outside? Certain things, not to judge, but to get a good idea of all the fundamentals. And so I've seen all this detail. I met the family, of course. I've seen the dimples to their face, the pimples on the children, to the minute detail. It was crazy. And, of course, seen the rooms. But why I call it a prolific nightmare is instead of doing good by these people, I murdered every single one of them in full detail. Grizzly, I could not go into detail what I did to these people because it's haunting. And mind you, there's minor is a part of it. And that in itself makes me feel psychotic. Mm-hmm. But the week of that case, I had that nightmare. And I feel like it was basically a scare tactic of trying to keep me away, trying to create fright within me to say, if I go there, there's a possibility that I could kill his family. Mm-hmm. And of course that was in the back of my head. Luckily I woke up and it wasn't true. I didn't like blackout drive there and kill the family or anything like that. But you know, I did go there. It did not stop me. And I was able to help that family. I do believe it was demonic infestation. We nullified it at the earliest time possible. It was only a few months, I believe, that they were dealing with it at that time. So it was very early. It was very easy to kind of disassociate with what was going on. But just to deal with that nightmare will always follow me to this day. I've had many crazy cases. But that was the first time it ever affected me within my sleep, my peacefulness.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with James. In part two, what happened when James had a nightmare about murdering a family before intervening on a demonic case? Did James share his nightmare with the homeowners and the details of this nightmare? And what did James experience once he got to this home? All of that and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to all of our episodes in their entirety. You can binge away on them right now. Sign up, patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.